We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
David Fizdale, the coach of the Memphis Grizzlies, is in our studio. If we may, Coach Fizz, pleasure to have you here.
Yes,
how are you?
Please. No, this is awesome. Thanks for having me.
The one thing I have to ask as coaches now, do you hate that dreaded phone call? And by that dreaded phone call, I mean, hey, can you now be an analyst since you're out of the playoffs?
Actually, I wanted to do it this year and get out of the way.
Yeah.
You know, and knock it out early in my career. But and also, I really am interested on what you guys do to prepare and this side of the camera.
Like, no, we don't do anything.
I got a tutorial, though, from Scott Van Pelt last night, just his whole crew and how they put a show together and the whole deal. And so it's interesting how you can apply a team to everything, right? You guys don't function here without this group of people that's out here in front of you. So I'm really interested in just watching how the whole operation works.
The difference is our team stinks.
Tough crowd. Oh, man.
The phone call I thought you were referring to was the one where after you made yourself
sort of
a legend.
That one, too.
With these comments.
Take that for data.
And this one.
But they're not going to rook us.
And then you get the phone call from the league. Yeah, that's going to cost you a little money. I'm always curious because I know you got fined. But forgetting the fine, as crazy as easy as it is for me to say, well, that's $30,000 and that's not that big of a deal. I'm always just curious, what exactly is the protocol? Who calls you and what do they say to inform you you're being fined by the league?
Well, someone called me from the league security office just to get my point of view on it. You know, they hear my piece and then they don't tell me what I'm being fined or if I'm being fined. I get the call from the GM later on to say, $30,000 is coming your way. So, you know, I was prepared to go down. Obviously, it was a somewhat strategic, you know, what I did. But my players stepped up big time for me and took that burden off my back.
That was nice of them to do. I remember when I got fined $7,500 for my shirt being untucked and some things I said to the ref about it. I remember the most mad was my wife. Tell me, you got go down that
Listen.
Road. That's $30,000. That's supposed to be coming out of your pocket there. How did that go?
Well, I got scolded right before the playoffs because I ended the league. I think I was number two or three in technical fouls. So she wasn't happy about that money coming out of the bank account, seeing that I'm so low on the pay scale compared to other head coaches. And she goes, look, you haven't even broken 50 wins yet, and you're giving away money. And so my wife's tough, and she handles the money, you know. So when I got this one, she was like, are you kidding me right now? She said, $30,000? She said, was it worth it? I said, absolutely, every dime. She said, all right, that's fine.
Dude, have you noticed, I know this is a difficult question, but Mike just brought it up with Isaiah Thomas earlier when he's complaining after games about calls he feels he's not getting, and clearly he's doing that with a purpose. He wants that call in game five. Do you feel that when you make those comments, part of it, you tell me, is it just part of it is just venting frustration, and then part of it is tactical. Do you feel it is effective?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest part of the tactic I wanted to get out of it was to show my team that I believe they can win the series. And I'm not fighting for nothing. I really believe that we could beat the Spurs, and I wanted them to see that. And so if that's all that I got out of it, then it was worth it. You know, I don't know if the officiating went one way or another after that, you know, because I couldn't use that as a crutch anymore anyway. It was just either – you was either going to win the game or lose the game. And so, you know, for me, I felt like it you know, it got the point across to my team that I believed in them and it galvanized them to come together and really compete.
So, to continue with Greeny's point, nothing in the back of your mind is saying maybe I'll get calls next game, or is that kind of a hopeful thing? Or?
I mean, it's just you just want to make sure that your main guys that's touching the basketball are getting the benefit of the doubt. You know, and Mike Conley obviously is a quiet guy, and I wanted to speak on his behalf because he wouldn't say anything. He may make a little fuss during the game, but he's not going to go overboard with it. So I just thought it was important that I stepped up for him, Z-Bo, for Mark, and at least try to get a playing field that I felt was level.
Who's that guy? Sorry, Greeny. Who's that guy that's going to blow up? Who's that player that you're going to have to say, whoa, 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 easy?
Well, I mean, Tony Allen is – a little off his rocker, but I'm glad he's on my side. He's awesome that way. But I would say him out of anybody. But you know, this year, you know who became a grumpy old man? Vince Carter.
Yeah.
Yeah, Vince Carter lost his cool multiple times where I had to reel him in and kind of put the straitjacket on him and, you know, relax him because, you know, he's getting older now. And
he's older than you, isn't he?
No. He's actually still younger than me, but, you know.
But not much.
No, but not much. And he was a little grumpy this year. Threw a couple elbows at some young guys on the court. So, you know, it's like young puppies and a big old dog, right. You know. He let them know it's still my yard.
Memphis coach David Fizdale in our studio at the Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Best phones, best networks. Half the cost of reminder in 14 minutes. We're giving you the word. We're giving you the ways to enter. And you could win a trip to the NBA Finals, to every game of the NBA Finals. Just be listening. We're going to give you the word at 9:20 Eastern Time. So 14 minutes from now, the contest is presented by Dell for Small Business. Just quickly on that, because I hear a lot of people say, what's going on with Vince? Why is Vince Carter still out there at the stage of his life, all that kind of stuff, all the money he's made, all the fame? Take us behind him a little bit. I mean, he just loves playing.
Yeah,
obviously.
I mean, come on. I mean, you only get to live once. And I think sometimes we put these labels on sports where guys should just hang them up because they hit a certain age or whatever. It's a game, and he loves playing a game. And it's not about the money anymore, which is what we should be praising.
Yeah.
That a guy's just out there playing because he loves to play basketball. He loves to mentor young players. He loves the camaraderie of the locker room and the thrill of competition. So why not? You know, and you know, when I was in Miami, we had Juwan Howard all the way up until about that age. And it was just about being able to come to the gym every day and do what you love doing, you know, what you started off doing in the first place. So I love the idea of him playing two or three more years and really fulfilling his dream of playing well into his 40s.
And then how about, and a lot of it we know is just timing. We talk about the same thing in the NFL with the big money contracts that go to the quarterbacks. When Mike Conley was the highest paid player and everybody's saying, oh, my God, what is going on in the NBA? And you, as you talked about, he's kind of a quiet guy. Any discussions with him about that? Was he feeling, I mean, a lot, because there was a lot of talk like that going on. Any effect on him at all?
You wouldn't have known that anything changed with him. You would have never known that his bank account changed. He was the same guy from the day I met him, you know, to the last day of the season. Just a total professional, first-class guy, team-first guy. But I made it clear to him right away when I was, you know, I got the job and I met with him. I said, don't you worry about it. I'm in this with you. And we're going to do this together where people stop talking about you're not good enough for this contract. And I really felt like together we accomplished that this year.
He's an underappreciatedly terrific player. There's no question about that. Mike and my coach Fizz is with us. All right, let's put you to work as an analyst here. You just played San Antonio in a previous series, tough six-game series.
Yeah.
They're now up 3-2 on Houston after a thrilling win last night. Before we get to the Kawhi Leonard situation, let's start with Tony Parker. The loss of him, specifically, how does that change what they're capable of, what they do, and if they get through this series, how does it impact them going forward?
I don't like putting a ceiling on a Spurs team and Coach Pop. I mean, he's going to improvise that team and work those parts to where they just keep moving. And I think that obviously not having Tony Parker in crunch time situations, a guy that you can trust with the ball, that you know gets the team organized, that's not afraid of the moment, you know, that is always something that you're going to miss. But, you know, to have a backup in Patty Mills, who's a champion, Danny Green, champion, Manu, champion. I mean, you can go down the line. Pau Gasol, even though it wasn't with them, champion. And so they're going to find a way to make the parts work. I think it gives them an opportunity, actually, to play some really dynamic lineups now with Manu and Kawhi doing all the handling and, you know, one big on the floor with Simmons and Danny Green. You know, those are the type of lineups they're going to need to have to pass not only Houston, but, you know, if they get that next round against Golden State.
And I'm with you on not putting a ceiling on Pop, but, you know, a ceiling may be put there if Kawhi Leonard is hurt more than we think. So, looking at it now as a head coach, when you're going to be in on the decision, trainers would be, you would be in the player. The one part I always love is you got to trust the player. You ain't trusting no player. There's no player in the world that's going to say, I can't go. They're always going to want to go, just like he wanted to stay in the game. So the two are easy ones. If it's bad enough where you know he's going to be out the next game, or he's running on that thing today and you know he's going to be fine.
Right.
It's the fence, as you know, of what you should do. How do you go about that? In making that decision on where you want to go?
Well, I think you gotta look at the guy move. You gotta, you know, go out there and really gauge his mobility, his pain threshold, all of those things. But I'll tell you what, if it's something I know how I was when I played my short career in college, and if it was something that I felt like I can play with, it was just no way I was going to let them hold me out. And I can't see a kid like Kawhi, as tough as he is, if he feels like at all that he can play in this game, there's no way I can see him sitting down.
I agree, but there is a way by Pop saying you're not even going to travel to
Houston.
Yeah,
that would be – I mean, obviously Pop can do that, but, I mean, if he's anywhere near that court, put it this way, he's going to be on it. And, you know, and I know Pop wants him out there, but if he's hurt, he's hurt, you know. And this is the kind of guy that you don't have to question if should he be playing or not playing. Like, if he's not playing, he's really hurt, right? So
if you think he can play and try and get by a game with him playing – does it come into the thought process, we're up 3-2, at the end of the day, we can afford to lose this game and come home in game 7? I know that's contrary to belief, but I guess that's why I'm asking.
Right.
Does that ever come into your brain to say, if he's right on the cusp of playing, do I sit him because we have a game lead?
I don't know. I mean, I'm the type of person that I think the longer a series goes, the more dangerous it becomes and the more things that can go wrong. Last year's finals is a perfect example. Draymond Green gets kicked out. You know, that series should have probably been over going back to Golden State. And he woke up a monster. It went longer. Next thing you know, a couple guys got banged up in that series as the series went on, mm-hmm. right? So the more you go, the longer you go, the more things that can go wrong, I think. So if they feel like he can really step out there and contribute, I think he's going to go and try to close that thing out.
He is David Fizdale. He's with us here. He's the coach of the Grizzlies. We are presented by Progressive Insurance, our guests on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, and we invite you to deliver a smile on Mother's Day with 1-800-Flowers.com. Right now, when you order a dozen multicolored roses for only $29.99, 1-800-Flowers will give you another dozen plus a vase absolutely free. Go to 1-800-Flowers.com/ESPN. So there's that series going on right now, and Golden State is waiting for the winner. There's Boston to Washington, who will play their game 5 tonight, and LeBron is waiting for the winner.
Yeah.
You coached LeBron 4 years. You were an assistant in Miami during the entirety of his stay in Miami. Mm-hmm. So take us places that we don't get to see. He's so incredibly public that it feels like we know almost everything about him.
Yeah.
But we don't see him in that locker room when it's just the guys. We don't see him in certain places that you do when you're part of it. Take us places we can't go with LeBron.
Yeah, and his public life is so deliberate. He's just handing you guys stuff on the plate. This guy's brilliant. I mean, you're talking about a true businessman, a strategist from the standpoint of understanding his brand and how it's affected by all outside things. So he's smart when it comes to that. But behind closed doors, he's personal. He cares. He really cares about the 15th guy on the bench. He cared about us as coaches. I mean, I don't know how many times I came into the office and – there's a gift on our desk from LeBron because he gets so much free crap, you know. He gets all of we benefit a lot with him, D-Wade. You know, we had some good sponsors. Never got so many Christmas gifts in my life. But, you know, he would do stuff like that for no reason. I mean, there's no reason for him to do that. You know, I got a new set of Dre beats on my desk, you know, for nothing. And he would do it for all of us. You know, it was no guy that was too big or too small. So that just shows you the type of guy he was. He just really liked to build camaraderie. We did so many things together as a team because he wanted us together. You know, we play in Cleveland. We're all at his house and watching stuff together and doing things together. And so that was the part that I'll always remember about him, the things that he did for us. He put me in a commercial once as a wedding gift. How about that? You know, I told him, because I said, don't give me anything. And instead of him listening, he says, hey, coach, why don't you be in the Samsung commercial with me? Well, that. You know, it's a nice little check, an assistant coach. And so, and he said, hey, man, congratulations on your wedding. I mean, come on. And so, you know, all I have is just great memories with the guy. He obviously had a lot of impact on me as a coach. He probably taught me more basketball-wise than I taught him. So, you know, I'm forever grateful to the guy.
Those are some great stories. But let's go to the basketball side, because we had Kyle Korver on yesterday, and he talked about the IQ of LeBron. And my comparison is when I was calling college games, I actually called Peyton Manning when he was in college, and could, in talking to him in production meetings and seeing the wheels turn, and then I got to talk to him in production meetings in the NFL, and how he just, you know, was so smart. But it's more intangible. So take us there a little bit on things that don't show up in the box score of just the basketball IQ of him.
I mean, he figures out quickly what other teams are trying to do against him. And he does it because of his preparation before he ever steps on the court. The guy is a film junkie. You know, even when he's not watching his own games, he's watching everyone else in the league play. I mean, that is his thing. Like, he really enjoys watching the game, watching how teams strategize, how they make adjustments, things like that. You know, it was huddles sometimes where his suggestions would just be like the suggestion that you needed. And the exact, you know, read on a play that we needed to make to break a team's back. And the great part about it is Spo was always like, okay, great. You know, that's a great idea because, you know, Spo didn't care. Spo is I think you guys know now watching him, he's a very egoless guy when it comes to that stuff. And I thought it was just cool to watch him work in those moments. But IQ, oh, I mean, he is a genius when it comes to the game and understanding the game.
But it's good to know what you said, though, lest we think, and a lot, you can have that naturally as well, mm-hmm. but to hear about all the preparation, that's a great message for everybody, is that you don't just show up and do that. There's a whole lot that goes behind that.
And I think, like I said last night to Scott, you know, he really picks up things from other guys that he comes along with. So, like, Shane Battier is a big-time numbers guy. Like, really understands them, really knows what to look for and how to defend a guy and where to push. And Shane brought that, you know, with him when he came to Miami. And LeBron immediately grabbed that and added it to his preparation as part of the way he goes about getting ready for a team or getting ready for an opponent. So, you know, he just soaks up information so fast and can apply it immediately. I think that's the difference. It's a lot of smart guys. But you show him something, you teach him something, he has it right away.
The one question that I would have relative to that is there have been times when, particularly when David Blatt was his coach, that I think mm-hmm. there was a sense that he was just overruling the coach. It's one thing to make a suggestion. It's another thing to basically say, no, we're doing it this way. And yeah. I wonder, and, you know, especially Spoelstra, who now has turned out to be a terrific coach, clearly, but he was a very young coach at that time, and LeBron was a big star. Did you ever see any of that? Was that something that was an issue?
Spo didn't agree to say no. I mean, it was just pretty simple. The best part about Spo is he had one agenda, and it was very pure. Let's win it. And so, you know, Spo's another guy. You're not just going to out-collect him when it comes to preparation and getting all the information and stuff like that. So when Spo made decisions, it was based on sound information and a whole lot of work. So when Spo said no, they respected it, and they knew it was coming from a place of big-time preparation.
So Tyronn Lue recently said he thinks that his is the toughest coaching job in the NBA, and I sort of smiled when I heard him say that.
Me too.
You know, there are guys coaching far less talent trying to win games.
I can understand where he's coming from.
Where is he coming from?
He's handling a lot of egos. The management of egos oftentimes can be the most difficult part of this business, you know, and not the X's and O's. I mean, we all copy each other anyway, you know, when it comes to offenses and defenses, and you try to plug in everything that fits your team. And then you get a little cute and creative and try to put your own stamp on things, right? But at the end of the day, you know, it's the other stuff that's going to be, you know, what really makes the difference, not the X's and O's. So he's figured that out.
All right, Coach Fizdale is in our studio here, and everybody loves him. I mean, the Twitter is phenomenal. Bean P. Way tweets, this man, David, at David S. Fizdale, is so laid back and chill, he has to be a cool cat off the court. I'm certainly not the only one. I see Derek Collins tweeted it here as well. I know Dan Lebitzhard pointed it out. Every time I hear you talk, I want you to say Funky Cold Medina. I assume that has to be something that you get all the time.
What's wrong with you, man?
Well, but you do really sound just like Tom.
I do get that a lot.
That a lot.
There's just no way.
Pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you do the wild thing.
As soon as I got out of puberty, it was
that was it, huh?
Yeah. So it's over, you know, a few years now.
That would have timed itself out actually pretty well, I would think.
That's
about 20 years ago. Okay, now help us with this, Coach. We're watching that highlight here, and for those of you with us on radio, we just showed how the Houston-San Antonio game ends in overtime last night. So quick scene set for those who didn't see it. San Antonio's up 3 in overtime. Final seconds, there's a jump ball.
Jump ball like 9 seconds ago, I believe.
Houston gets control of the jump ball, a little bit of a scrum, mm-hmm. and they've got two players who are sort of trapped between the sideline and the mid-court line, which obviously they can't go over or it's a half-court violation. So they're trapped back there. They have a timeout remaining. You got two guys, there's two defenders, it's an easy double, it's easy to switch, and they have a timeout remaining. So even if your strategy going into this, if you're Mike D'Antoni, is we're not going to call a timeout and let San Antonio set up their defense. At that moment, the one that we're currently watching, where clearly Harden is just boxed in.
Yeah.
Could you see a player calling a timeout? If you're the coach, can you yell timeout and say, okay, we still have 2 seconds left, let's set up a play?
That option is there, obviously, and I've been on both sides of it. You know, you see that ball kind of bobbling and ends up in your best player's hands. I've been on the side where you let it go and he ends up hitting a huge shot. Spo and I used to joke about all the time. D. Wade hit a couple game winners before we got the big three, and every time it was off of a bobble. You know, so you don't know how those plays are going to work out. Obviously, I know if Coach D'Antoni wakes up this morning, he's saying probably I should have called a timeout, right? So, you know, the next day in hindsight, you always kick yourself as a coach. But I've been on both sides of it where you call a timeout, you turn the ball over trying to get it in bounds.
Or you know? Pop gets a chance to set a defense.
Yeah, it's a lot of different ways that go. So it's easier for, you know, me to sit here now and make a decision on that. But in the heat of the battle, you see the ball fall into James Harden's hands. You know, he really got by Manu there. Manu made a heck of a play from behind. But if he gets that off, you would say that's a pretty good look. Nobody contested in front of him.
At the end of it all, isn't that it? Because I thought the same thing. It's in Harden's hands, so let him play. He made a move on Ginobili and had an open three. Rarely do you see the block coming up from behind like that.
Right.
Great play by Ginobili.
That's a great play.
Harden was looking right at the basket on a textbook three for him.
Oh, I guarantee you in his heart he felt like, oh, I just broke free. And Manu Ginobili, I mean, he just made an incredible basketball play because that could have worked out where Manu chopped his arm.
Right.
And now he's shooting three free throws. It's a lot of ifs in there. So, you know, obviously I'm going to take care of my coaches. So, D'Antoni, roll with your best player. You didn't get the shot, so what?
I hear you. And obviously for Ginobili, not only is that a great athletic play, but it's a great heady play because he knows Harden has to pull up at the three-point line because they're down three with 2 seconds left in the game. So with a lot of players, you might say, well, he got kind of lucky. With a guy like Ginobili, let's give him the benefit of the doubt to say he read that. He knows he's got to shoot it from there, and so that's why he makes
the
play.
And if he fouls him, at least you got three more shots for him to screw it up.
And it's only to tie, too.
Yeah,
at the end of the day, the only thing that – well, I guess the worst thing would have been if he chopped him and Harden made it.
And I think ultimately, I don't even think Manu thought about any of that. His competitive spirit was – don't give it up.
Right.
I want to ask you a couple of questions around the league. And by the way, everyone enjoying your appearance, including our friend Stephen A. Smith.
Stephen A.
Just tweeted, great to see my man Coach Fizdale. I'm Mike and Mike right now. Great job this season, Coach.
Thank you, Stephen.
I know how much you love LeBron. Again, you coached him in Miami for 4 years. And everybody admires how great he is. But the NBA player resting debate is one that we talked about a lot here on the show. And it directly affected you guys because, as I recall, the first time this year that Cleveland rested basically all of their stars was in Memphis.
Yeah.
So as the coach of the home team in that situation, where obviously it benefits you in trying to get a win, but you know your fans are disappointed, your home fans are disappointed.
Yeah.
I'm just curious what your thoughts were that night and what your overall thought is on this issue of player rest.
You know, I've tried to kind of take a backseat to this one because, you know, obviously this being my first year and this being such a polarizing topic that I've kind of, you know, I think Pop and guys like that, you know, the veteran Rick Carlisle, you know, those guys have seen enough of this stuff that they can come to some better conclusions than I can. You know, the only thing I can think of is that if we don't want them to sit out games to shorten the season, you know, just me being, you know, not really knowing everything about this, but something's going to have to happen. Because fans, you know, a lot of these folks, they don't have money to be, you know, shoveling out to go, you know, get disappointed by who plays in the game. And we have to be mindful of that with our fans and respect the fact that these people work really hard for their money.
We keep hearing the science of today and such. Have you seen any documented science, or has it been presented to you by athletic trainers or anybody else that how this should work?
Yeah, I think every team has a formula that they're following and you know, some type of experts that's you know, giving them advice on how their players should be rested and when they're hitting certain points where they're more prone to injury and things like that. And, you know, as a coach, once you know that that is a part of the formula that – you know, from an organizational standpoint, that's what you guys are going to do to monitor your players. It, for me, it takes a load off of me, and I don't have to guess anymore on if I'm taking a player too far or if I'm backing them off. I shouldn't be backing them off, whatever it is. You know, because conversely, if I go against them for whatever reason and overplay a guy or something, now he gets hurt, and I didn't listen to that, you know, that now it falls back on me. So it kind of gives me a lot of clarity in making these decisions. You know, obviously, I know a lot of people get frustrated with, you know, the restrictions on minutes and resting guys in games. But, you know, you got to think from the organizational standpoint. They're thinking about, you know, we've invested a lot of money in this one player. You know, we got to make sure we take care of our investment and not just play it into the ground. and that he's there for the really important stuff, which is the playoffs. And so I see both sides of it. Obviously, I empathize with the fans from the standpoint of finances. You know, it doesn't come easy. And, you know, you're trying to put food on the table at the same time, show your kids a good time, and you want them to see LeBron James play or Dwayne Wade or whoever. You know, and they're not there, that can be pretty frustrating. So we're going to have to do something as a league because our fans are everything for us. And I'm sure, you know, Commissioner Silver's all over this thing.
Those are some of the biggest names in the sport. Someone else who, for entirely other reasons, has made his name one of the most mentioned in the sport of basketball is LeVar Ball. And I'm just curious, as a coach in the NBA right now, you've obviously seen all this stuff playing out, and the kid is going to come into the league this year. You're not going to get a chance to draft him because you're not in the draft lottery. He's going to go someplace super high. But I just wonder, what is your take on this whole thing?
I guess this is where it's at. I think this is, you know, the new generation of everything. We're learning stuff every day with how the world is changing and how athletics is changing, how social worlds are changing. So, you know, maybe this is where it's going. And I don't know if that's good or bad or whatever. You know, I just know he's their dad. He cares about them. He's outspoken about how he feels about them. And, you know, we'll see how it goes. And it's funny because I actually grew up playing against the younger Ball brothers, uncles, who are twins. They played at Westchester High School where Trevor Ariza, Bobby Brown, all of these guys, Amir Johnson went to school there. My high school years was against his uncles. So, yeah, it's a small community in L.A. You saw Bruce Bowen coming earlier. You know, our L.A. basketball roots, we're all tied together. So, it's kind of cool for me, actually, to see these kids now, the next generation of Ball brothers, you know, coming into the NBA and competing.
So as we see a new generation coming, as you mentioned, this things of today and how they change, you got in the NBA as an assistant in 2003. So we're talking about 15 years now. From that point to now, what in your mind has been some of the biggest changes that you've seen in the game? Because it's really not that long a time, but I bet you've seen.
Are we talking tactical or just every aspect?
I would see dealing with younger players now and not more X's and O's, but more the game and being professionalized.
Well, I think just being honest about it, you can't yell at these guys like you used to. You know, for whatever reason, when I was growing up, you can beat us right into the ground and we just stone face it, take it, keep moving on. But if you overdo that with these guys, they shut down on you. And for whatever reason, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a psychologist. I don't know what has created that. You know, I know with some of my guys that I've coached, you know, through college and now pro, a lot of guys that I coached that came from single parent homes a lot of times, especially without a dad in the home, had a hard time with a male yelling at them, you know, cause they were the man of their house. And it's like, you're not going to talk to me like that. You know, you're going to respect me. And so I've run into that a lot, you know, with the younger generation. You know, from guys from tough situations, but I don't know what really ultimately creates it. I just know they're different. I know they're used to getting things right away. You know, with these phones and these tablets and being able, I push a button now and order something that's at my house, you know, in 24 hours. And when we were growing up, you had to wait for everything. Everything was like patience, and they don't have to wait for anything now. And so, you know, maybe that plays a part in it, and you add in a ton more money. I mean, these guys are getting paid a lot of money compared to what it was 15 years ago overall, you know, and a lot more social recognition, and everybody's a star now. People that have no talent on TV now with this reality stuff is superstars and millionaires, you know, just because their lives are open. And so, you know, we're just dealing with a lot of different aspects and things changing. And I don't know if it's better or worse or whatever. I'm just flowing with it and trying to adjust as it goes.
You don't have a choice, right? I mean,
yeah,
you got to
adapt or die, baby.
Yeah. A couple of interesting psychological questions that you bring up I want to get to next. And most importantly, we'll get to your question next. The Twitter view for Coach Fizz, your questions for him through us on Twitter right after this word.
Your Take That for Data rant was one of the best in recent memory. What's your favorite coach or athlete rant of all time? That you can, you know, at least kind of repeat.
Danny. It was Denny Green.
Denny Green?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah? You want to crown him?
They are who we thought they were.
Yeah. Yes. He smacked the podium, too, just like you smacked the table.
I actually found myself saying that exact rant in my office after a game once when we lost a game to a team who they beat us exactly how we told them they could beat us. I was yelling at my coaches doing the same exact thing, and I caught myself. I said, I sound like Coach Green right now.
You did?
So that one kind of stuck with me, obviously. And then the practice is a good one.
Oh, Iverson, yeah.
Yeah, that's
We just had the 15th anniversary.
We did. When he swore all on that, Greeny was doing SportsCenter. When they threw it back to SportsCenter, Greeny had to apologize to the country for all the swearing.
It's so funny.
It was well worth it, though. It was endlessly entertaining. Golic, what's next?
We have from Dallin Moon. Do you think this is the best you've ever seen LeBron play in the postseason?
Yeah. For sure. This is what we're witnessing right now is this is historic. Come on, 66%, you know, inside the paint, you know, 47 from three. Every pass he makes is perfect. I mean, we're watching greatness right before our eyes. And, you know, this is going to be a great playoffs as we move forward.
And the last one I want to ask, really, it's a two-parter, but I want to ask the second part of it. What was the most challenging part about working with the big three in Miami?
You know, the beginning really was the toughest part of just getting them to be okay with the process and be patient with the process of figuring out who was going to take shots when. And, you know, all of those guys were trying to let the other guy play and trying to stay out of each other's way. So that took a little bit of time. And once they figured that out, boy, it was fun to be a part of. You know, at the end, I thought it was the toughest challenge was, getting these guys revved up during the regular season, you know, when you talk about going to four straight finals, you know, and just where they don't get seduced by the success. I thought Spo did an incredible job of always keeping them on edge. And I just thought that by that fourth one, San Antonio was already pissed from the year before and hungry. And I thought we were just done physically by the time we got there. So, you know, those are two biggest challenges, I would say, in that era.
A Twitter view, Mike and Mike, Coach Fizdale. And to finish it up today, you brought up something earlier that I thought was really interesting on the notion of how young people today in general, but players today, you can't yell at them the way you used to. And I've read a lot about this, not necessarily when it comes to sports and coaching, but that younger people today, as opposed to people of our generation, want to know why. So just to use Bob Knight as the ultimate example, in his day, he would yell at players, and an appropriate answer, if the player had a question, was, because I said so, and that's it.
Yeah.
Is that what you have found? Do players, if you yell at them today, do they shut down, or do they ask you questions? Do they say, why? Do they want it? Do they demand more?
I get both. I get both where I've had guys where they just go into a shell. You know, and they're not talking to anybody, and they personalize it. And I've had guys that are like, no, tell me why we're doing this and why this is the right thing to do. Like I said earlier, there's times where I do feel like that is really important, that you should explain the why. I also feel like over the course of time together, you shouldn't have to explain the why as much, because you just know that I'm going to be prepared and I'm making decisions based on sound, you know, work and hard work at night and watching my film. And then there's times, like we talked about, it's a 20-second timeout, buddy. I don't have time to tell you why. We're doing this.
Yeah. No chit-chat here.
No, yeah, this is not a negotiation. Get it done.
For those players that kind of shut down and go into a shell, do you then have to play psychologist, or do you just kind of let them do their work themselves out of it?
You try to play psychologist, and you really try to help them out of it. You know, obviously sometimes it can come off where it feels like it's a personal thing and guys personalize it. And so you try to fight past that and just, you know, try to always remind them that this is more to push you somewhere else and to get you to another place. But, you know, oftentimes that it can also fracture, and you can have a frustrating relationship from a personal standpoint. But again, we're not in this to be pals. We're in this to win it.
Yeah,
and,
so like,
how it goes.
Like when we were young, if you asked why, you started running. Right?
Or just left the gym because you're getting kicked out.
Oh, like, that's exactly right.
Hank Egan just pointed to
the door. Or go into a shell. You're going to go into a shell, go do it in the showers. Get out. I mean, it's so different. So different today.
No doubt.
Yeah.
Both inside and outside of the world of sports. It's a very interesting topic.
They also stand out when they're not like that, right? The Kawhi Leonards, all these guys who just stone-faced, go to work, get it done, and play through it all.
Absolutely right.
We are out of time. This was a delight. Coach Fizz, come
Thanks
back and see us
me,
again
guys.
Sometime
great.
Soon. We
this
really awesome. Appreciate it. And we will see you tomorrow right back here, same place, Mike and Mike.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.